By a grant from Champagne Cycle, offering equipment, information, and experience to help the active cyclist of any age enjoy the fun of cycling. Champagne Cycle, 506 South Country Fair Drive, just south of Springfield Avenue in Champaign. Programming on WILL AM is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Learn about Krannert Center's 2004-2005 performance season with guest artists Don Upshaw and Richard Good, the English Concert and violinist Andrew Manzi, and the Mark Morris Dance Group by visiting KrannertCenter.com or stopping by to pick up a season brochure.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back to the program Brian Johnson. He's professor of journalism at University of Illinois. He teaches photojournalism. Before coming to work at the U of I as a teacher, he was a newspaper photographer, worked for the News Gazette, the paper here in Champaign-Urbana, and every once in a while is here on this program and we talk about cameras and photography. When we started out, we talked a lot about film.
Film?
And
What's that?
I'll tell you later. It was something from my childhood. And now, of course, in recent years, I think we have been talking more and more and more about digital photography. But whatever kind of question you have, maybe you're thinking about buying a new camera and you're not quite sure how to think about that. Maybe you are thinking about trying to take better pictures, and maybe you are a very serious hobbyist and you spend a lot of time in the dark room, or you're someone who just likes to take pictures on family holidays and when you're on trips, and you just want the best pictures that you can get. And whether you shoot film, whether you shoot digital, any and all of that is certainly welcome. And all you have to do is call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Thanks for being here.
Sure. Glad to be here.
Digital photography just seems to keep marching on.
It's like a steamroller. It's like a steamroller rolling downhill without the brakes.
How many cliches can we get
put in one sentence?
Yeah. Well, but I guess that's when we first started, talking about digital, it has to be at least, I don't know, 10 years ago or something like that.
It's been
did
at least
you
10.
Really think that it would, just given enough time, that would have that kind of momentum and that we would have that many people using digital cameras?
Yeah, actually, I think I didn't have any other thought than it would be as popular as it is for so many reasons. I mean, I think the main one is that you have your pictures immediately, and it's maybe a little bit of the Polaroid model of things, but now there's also not a film cost associated with it. So you can shoot, and I know with my own shooting, I shoot a lot more now just because I can. It doesn't cost me anything. I download them to my computer. We can talk about the archiving issues later, but I can shoot and shoot and shoot, and, you know, seemingly there's no cost to me of doing that. So I think it's been really liberating for a lot of photographers. Kind of a funny thing, when we did the photo book that my students and I did a year or so ago, CUN7 Plus, I had some of my former students come back to shoot. So here we are. We're shooting Champaign-Urbana over the course of 10 days. And I noticed that one of my former students, the guy who sort of prodded me along to come out with the book project again, when he would shoot a lot of times, he'd go, he'd shoot like, you know, three shots in a row. For every shot, I mean, there was never just a single shot. It was always like three shots in a row. And then there was someone who had graduated from the U of I in journalism about the same time I graduated up in Wisconsin, who I knew because I was down here at the News Gazette while he was working. I noticed when he was shooting with a digital camera and what he said himself, that he did the same thing. And I said, okay, John, well, tell me why you just are not shooting one shot anymore. Why are you shooting these three shots? And he said, you know what? I used to get so many pictures where someone would blink. You know, I'd shoot that one shot and they would be blinking and that would just ruin it. So he says, now I shoot three shots and I know that one of them is not going to have a blink in it. So even though, let's say, you know, 10% of the shots would have had a blink in it, basically, now none of the shots have a blank because he's able to shoot those three shots in a row.
Yeah. And then the advantage is that you it's in some way you just look at them and then you print the one that you think is the best one. That you print that one
exactly, and the other one you just delete the rest. Away. Yeah, that's it exactly. And that gets to the biggest downside of the digital camera right now is that when you have to edit those images, I think it's slower than if you just had a pile of prints and you could, you know, good, 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 bad pile, good, good, bad pile. You know, you could shuffle them in that way. You can still do the thing with a digital camera, but right now the file sizes are large enough. And even though we think today's computers are fast, and they are, when you're working with these huge digital photography files, it can be fairly slow. So I think some of the inconvenience of that will go away in a few years. The problem is that as the digital cameras get to have greater and greater resolution, the file sizes go larger and larger. Mm-hmm. But I think it's getting to the point now where, a 5-megapixel camera or an 8-megapixel camera, you can easily get, an 8x10, 11x14, 16x20-inch print with no problem, with amazing detail. So by that, I mean we're not going to really see the overriding push to give us a lot more resolution in the chip. At some point, the manufacturers, and they're starting to do this now, they're going to start pushing for making the cameras faster. Because one of the biggest downsides for the digital camera is that when you press that shutter button, particularly with some of the mid to lower end cameras, there's a shutter delay. And it's not so much the shutter, but it's the camera getting powered up and ready to take the picture. Well, once you get up to, now don't anyone quote me in 5 years and laugh at this, but when you get to be 8 megapixels for your image size, that is a plenty decent size for, enlargements, for cropping in the photo, whatever. Now I think we hope manufacturers do is really work on the speed of the camera, how quickly it's going to move pictures from the camera to your computer, how quickly you can, flip through the photos that you've seen, maybe high resolution screens that are on the camera, things mm-hmm. like that. So more the quality of experience features rather than just the raw technical features.
Questions are welcome here, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. We're talking with Brian Johnson about photography. He's a professor of journalism at U of I, teaches photojournalism. And if you have questions about digital photography or film, any kind of camera, you can give us a call. I think now it's possible to get a camera with 5 megapixels resolution for not a whole lot of money. It
right.
seems to me that used to be, 5 used to be a lot.
Right, it did.
And now 5 is like, five. And you're thinking that it won't, are there now cameras that will do 8?
Oh yeah, sure, yeah. Sure. Canon and Nikon both came out with sort of an all-in-one camera that has a zoom lens built in, non-interchangeable lenses, so you can't change the lens, but there's a pretty good zoom ratio on it, and those are both 8. Those are selling for about $1,000, $1,200.
So how many megapixels do you really need?
Well,
as many as you can get.
Bigger is better. Honestly, when you get to be 8 megapixels, you can make, and I'm not making this up, you can make an 11x14 enlargement from an 8 megapixel camera, and it'll look just fantastic.
Yeah.
So it'll also let you crop into the image if you need to. Let's say you couldn't get close enough. You can crop into that image and get a really decent, probably even an 8x10, but, certainly a 5x7 or snapshot size.
Let's talk with the caller here. Somebody on a cell phone. We'll get right to them on line one. Hello.
Hello. Enjoying the program. Just wanted some advice. I'm 35mm photographer in the past, getting ready to switch to a digital type camera, and I wondered, in the digital realm, what kind of features you'd recommend we look for if we're familiar with more advanced photography skills than 35mm.
Sure. Well, having given that as a parameter, I would, if you like to shoot, where you're setting the shutter speed and the aperture, yourself, then you can look for those features in the camera. And but one thing that's maybe a little bit different for people coming from film to digital, and maybe I don't know how old your camera is now, but a lot of the newer cameras, film and digital, do such a great job with particularly auto exposure that there's not as – it isn't as much where you always have to outsmart the camera. So there's
what
not
about a, lens issues and that kind of thing? Is that a big variable with digital?
That is probably one of the biggest areas that you'll see the variation within the cameras. That on the lower end of the scale, just like on the lower end of the 35 millimeter scale, you'll have a camera that won't have a zoom lens built in. As you get to sort of the medium and upper end ones, they get a a better and better zoom lens or longer zoom lens built in.
You get cameras that have, they're interchangeable lenses?
Yes. In fact, on the low end of the interchangeable lens scale, Canon has their digital Rebel, and Nikon just came out with their D70. The digital Rebel with kind of a wide to normal zoom is about $1,000, and the Nikon is, I think it's like $1,300.
Wow, so it's a big price jump.
Yeah, so there's still, you can buy the similar camera that's a film-based camera for, $250 or $300.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you see that price differential changing rapidly as the technology improves like it does with computers?
I think we will see that. I think that the entry-level digital SLR, the interchangeable lens variety, I would think that in a couple of years we'd be seeing, price points maybe around $500 or $600.
Okay.
Go ahead. Oh, all I was going to say is that if they can make that same camera in the film model and sell it for $250, for $200 more for the digital part of it, I would think at some point that would be easily reachable.
Yeah. Very good.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. And again, the questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Do the on a camera like that, like the Nikon or the Canon, those that have interchangeable lenses,
right?
Does the film camera and the digital camera use the same lens, or are they somehow different?
Well, the answer is yes and yes. Where right now, they use the same lenses. Nikon and also Canon recently have come out with a line of lenses that are specifically for the digital versions. So the camera bodies themselves are essentially the same size as the 35 millimeter counterpart. They use the same lens mount. So most people are doing that. Now, because the sensor is physically smaller than a piece of 35 millimeter film, you get a greater magnification ratio. So with the Canon cameras, you've got a 1.6 magnification ratio. So if you're using a 100 millimeter lens, it would be 100 millimeters on a 35 millimeter camera. That lens on the digital camera would be more like 160 millimeters. So it's a little bit more of a telephoto. And the easy way to think about that is if you take a piece of 35 millimeter film, or if you take like a 4x6 print and then you crop into the middle part of it, that's kind of what happens with a digital camera because the sensors are smaller, usually. And that's why some manufacturers came out with lenses that were geared just for that smaller sensor size.
Yeah. Okay. Well, again, if people who are listening have questions about cameras, photography, give us a call. 333-WILL, toll free, 800-222-WILL. I think now as more and more people are getting interested in the digital photography, the people who make the cameras realize that you got to give people some way to make prints. And it seemed like there are a number of manufacturers that are offering a kind of a package deal with a camera and then a printer that you just plug it in there. It will show you what it looks like and then it will make prints. And I suppose one of the limitations, though, is that it will only – maybe it'll just give you a snapshot or it'll give you a choice of two sizes.
Sure.
But it won't do – maybe it won't print it in as many different ways as you could if you had more sophisticated equipment.
Right. And – certainly you're just limited by how much you want to spend and how much hassle you want to put into it. What's been really popular in the last year or so are the printers that do just print the snapshot size pictures. Most of them are inkjet printers. I just saw an ad for a company that's also produced a dye sublimation printer. Dye sublimation is a type of print that looks a lot more like a photograph than the inkjet, although the inkjet prints are amazing in their quality. And this device will print, you know, a 3x5, a 4x6, or even a 5x7. And there's like a little remote control that's wired to it where there's a little LCD screen on the remote, and you just kind of go back and forth and tell it what size. Mm-hmm. So, and then there's also some companies that have come out with sort of portable printers that will let you print in this snapshot size. So that's, those have been, I think, the most recent introductions or the, you know, the popular front.
Other calls. Let's see. We're getting full here. We'll start in with Urbana Line 1. Hello.
Hi, this, I'm have a 5 megapixel Nikon Coolpix and a Mac PowerBook, and I was a 35 millimeter Nikon user. My question is about the software for getting the pictures into a frame work so that I can print them out in various sizes.
Sure.
And I'm just don't know where to go.
Okay.
I don't like what the Mac has. I don't like what Nikon has, and very well. So.
Sure, sure. What do you know? Which system of the Mac operating system you're running?
X.
Okay. So you're running OS X. So OS X has iPhoto that you can use, and I like iPhoto. Okay, you know, I think it.
I've been using it, but the problem is you can't necessarily tell the printer to vary the size easily.
Yeah, it, you know,
it's clunky.
Yeah, it is clunky, and I completely agree. Normally what I've found or what I use, Apple also has a program called Image Capture.
Oh, okay.
And it's just one of the freebies that comes with it. And a lot of times what I do, just because I'm used to working with the image files directly,
mm-hmm.
I'll start up Image Capture and I'll capture my images that way. And then I use Adobe Photoshop for working with my images.
Okay, I don't have that yet, but I've been suspecting that that was what I needed.
Right. Now there are some cheap, you know, there's like Photoshop Elements, you know, there's some less expensive versions mm-hmm. of the software out there. And then there is the other option that actually, I mean, a lot of the packages, you know, the packages that come with the cameras or the packages that come free with the computer stuff, mm-hmm. they're all a little bit clunky because they think that you're stupid.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make it so easy that sometimes I think they make it more complex.
Mm-hmm.
If you can master their kind of metaphor for how they've set up everything, and you learn to use that software, then it's really not too bad.
Okay.
And that's one thing that I found, that I worked with iPhoto a little bit, and it actually wasn't too bad once I learned how it wanted me to do things.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let's go to the next, and this listener is in Charleston on line 3. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh. I'm more concerned with taking images that are, rather than telephoto lenses, smaller macros.
Right.
I'm looking to try to get a new digital. I have a digital, but it doesn't have a macro lens. And I wanted a recommendation on something that you could use to take pictures of small things.
Right.
Close up.
Right. You know, one thing that's nice with a lot of the digital cameras is that you can activate the little LCD screen on the back. And some of the cameras do let you focus in, you know, closer. You know, like some of the video cameras also, you can get in amazingly close onto things. What I think if you're going to be doing a lot of this work, though, that probably the best advice would be to get one of the digital SLRs where you can then buy a macro lens for it.
Would you have a recommendation for one? I have just an HP now that we just picked up for home use, but I really need to use this for my profession where I take pictures of small.
Right.
Object within about, say, a 4 to 6 inch focal range.
Sure, Sure. I'm a big Canon fan, so I'm certainly biased towards the Canon equipment. I think, you know, but clearly Nikon produces a great product also. So I would say either the Digital Rebel or the Nikon D70 that they just came out with. And then I would just buy one of the separate macro lenses that you can get. You know, you'll probably would make sense just to get the 50 millimeter macro lens for those, because with the magnification with a digital camera, that would probably make the most sense. And it's going to, you know, be a little bit more expensive if you buy the camera body. Let's say that you buy the Digital Rebel. So the camera body itself is $900. The macro lens, you know, might be another $200 or $300 on top of that.
Okay.
But with that, and, you know, particularly since you're doing it for your business, that would, you know, that would give you a camera that would really be able to do what you are hoping it would do without having to sort of, I don't know, make compromises.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Thank you. And we'll go to talk to someone in Sycamore, line number 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I own one of those Sony cameras that writes to a mini compact disc.
Right.
And I was just, I like it very much because interfacing to any computer is a breeze. You just drop the disc in the CD drawer and away you go. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on whether those were going to become obsolete anytime soon, or is that a reasonably popular format for digital cameras to use?
I suspect that is going to go away. But having said that, I'm going to temper that a little bit. Sony just came out with a professional video camera that shoots to a mini DVD disc. I know that Sony's been a real proponent of that type of format, you know, writing to an optical disc in that way. But I think what's really the technology of the day are more the compact flash or any one of the other, you know, secure digital or, you know, whatever the... There are a number of different formats of the memory cards. So because there aren't any moving parts... and because I think it's a little bit quicker to write to those devices, I think you'll see the CD burning cameras not be as popular in the future.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right. Other questions are welcome. Our guest is Brian Johnson. He's professor of journalism at U of I. He teaches photojournalism and occasionally is here and we talk about cameras and photography. And our questions are welcome, whether you're interested in film or digital, you want to talk about cameras or printing pictures or what have you, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. When back at near the beginning, one of the things you said was you talked a little bit about or brushed on the issue of how it is over long periods of time,
right.
You're going to store
right.
this stuff.
Right, right. And I think to be fair about this, I'm going to start this out by saying, how have most people stored the film and the photographs that they've taken in the past? And, you know, what's the classic image, but, you know, a shoebox that someone pulls out and it's like, and then you say, gosh, and where are the negatives? And they look at you with this look like, negatives? What do I need those for? I threw those away. So having said that, when you're archiving with digital images, it is a little bit of an issue because you are locked into the technology. Now, you can print out every print that you like and think is good from your digital images, and you can then store those in the shoebox just like you did with the 35 millimeter or other size film mm-hmm. that you shot in the past. So you can definitely do that now if you want to. You can print all those out. One of the nice things about digital images, though, is that you don't necessarily have to print them out. You can burn them onto a CD or a DVD. But here's the deal. Are we going to have DVD drives? Are we going to have CD drives in the future? You know, clearly we do right now, and they're very popular now. But, you know, what's the classic example for, you know, what's the medium that's gone away? So we talk about film being stored in shoeboxes. When we talk about music, we talk about...
cassettes.
Yes, or...
LPs.
Or... The 8-track tape, right?
How could we forget the 8?
You know, it's sort of like the Edsel of the recording industry. You know, 8-track tapes were really popular. It was easy to use. You know, just put in the cartridge, and then they eventually went away. Just like cassettes, just like LPs.
I guess you can still get a cassette player. I don't think you can get an 8-track player anymore.
Yeah. So the whole key of it is that as you save your images, you have to have data migration, which means that you have to copy all of your old files onto whatever the current storage medium is. Mm-hmm. But as computers get faster, you know, that should become easy if you don't mind spending the time, if you don't mind spending an afternoon or two doing this. Classic example of this that I was just up till almost 1 o'clock last night working on. We had a whole bunch of 8mm movies left over from when I was a kid. My dad, bless his heart, said, you know what, we should really get these copied over onto DVD. So we sent them off to a place to have them made into DVDs, which is cool. And they also then, once your images are sort of digitized, they, you know, on a DVD, all you have chapter selections, and then there's like a little picture of that chapter. Well, you can go to their website then and choose which picture you want to be sort of the chapter picture for each of these reels of film, which is really cool. But it's taken me, you know, a couple Sunday evenings, you know, over the course of a month to try to get this thing all organized. But again, what is it? That's data migration. It's moving an obsolete medium into a newer one. And that's really what people will need to do with their images.
Mm. Okay. Let's talk to somebody else here, Urbana, and line number one. Hello.
Oh, hello. I've just come into the show, so this may have been covered, but I'm looking to buy just a very easy-to-use digital camera. That's my basic premise here, that it's pretty not madly expensive and easy to use. Can you recommend one?
Sure. And what I'm going to recommend is not going to be a specific recommendation, but I'm going to recommend that you go to a camera store, preferably, and if not, that you can go to one of the discount stores. But what you really want to do is you want to hold the cameras, but more importantly than just holding them, and that's why I recommend going to a camera store. Like here in town, we have Bates Camera. You can go there and they can turn the camera on for you, and you've got a salesperson there who can show you the features because all of them look nice, right? And they all might feel nice, but they all do things in slightly different ways. So you really need to hold the camera and see how the features work.
Wow. Okay, so there's no specific sort of mode that it operates in that I need to look out for or something?
Well, almost all the cameras will have what they might call the simple mode. Canon has a mode where it's sort of like a green rectangle. And when I'm talking to my students in my photo classes, and it's kind of joking with them, I call it the idiot mode because, you know, it's like those books, you know, the Idiot's Guide to
Foot.
Yeah, and sometimes that's what I need too if I'm in a rush. It's like put it in the green mode and I'm set. And so that's really what you want to look for is, you know, maybe it has a few features that you can set, but that it has just a simple mode because, you know, frankly, for 65% to 85% of the population, most of the time, just to let the camera do everything is probably fine, and you're going to produce really solid pictures in those modes.
Yeah, I think so. Okie doke. Thank you very much indeed.
All right. Thank you. And again, other people, if you have questions, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, if somebody is just looking for a point-and-shoot kind of camera, they want to take it, point it at what they want,
right.
They want to push one button,
right.
And they want to take a picture. Even with those kinds of cameras, whether it's a camera that's pretty much what it will do or it's a camera that will do more, but you could set it so it will just do
right.
Is there really very much difference between one of those cameras and another? Or are they pretty much all just going to do the same thing? They'll take whatever you point it at.
Right.
It'll take a picture.
Right. You know, where the problem is that a lot of these cameras will do that. They have a simple mode. But then they also do everything under the sun. Mm-hmm. So it's the classic, you know, program your VCR problem where, you know, I just want this darn thing to record my show for 2 hours and then stop. But it has all these other timer features and, you know, this feature and that feature that I'm not going to use, I don't care about. So that's why I always recommend to people they go and actually hopefully have someone knowledgeable showing them the camera, because so often all that we want to do is turn it on and take the picture. With a lot of these cameras, they've peppered the body of the camera with all these buttons and controls that they don't care about and don't really want to know about. And so, you know, like I'm looking at the at a picture of a camera here. You know, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There are 10 separate buttons on the back of the camera, and I think that is easy to use, but yet you have to know the menu structure. You have to know how you get at all those features.
Yeah.
That's why there's really no substitute for going in and having someone show you those features. They'll all do the same thing, but one camera might make sense to you and how it gets to those features, and another camera might make no sense to you at all. So that's why you really need to turn it on and see how those menus are structured.
Yeah. Well, this particular camera, it's you have a Popular Photography magazine, and it's an ad. It's on the back, and it's a Sony. And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking they're starting to look like TV remotes.
Right. And yeah, no, it's true. And something else you'll notice about this camera, there's no viewfinder.
Just a screen.
Right, the only viewfinder you have is the big LCD on the back.
Huh. So,
you have to hold it away from your face so you can see it, and that, yeah, I think, reduces the stability a little bit for trying to hold the camera steady.
Are there many cameras now that are like that, that don't have a viewfinder?
I think for the smaller ones, you know, they're trying to make them smaller. They say, well, we can cut out the viewfinder, and that'll let us make it smaller. You know, a lot of people, when they shoot with these cameras anyway, they just use the LCD screen. They don't use the viewfinder anyway.
Yeah. Okay. We have several callers here. They're all in Champaign, and we'll start with line one. Hello.
Hi. Yeah. I have a Olympus 4, I think it's a 4 or 5 megapixel camera, and I like the camera, but it seems to have a very long pause between the time you push the button and the time that it actually takes the picture. I assume that's a software problem or a processing power problem,
right,
or whatever. Are there cameras that are, you know, more or less instantaneous that are digital, or?
Sure. You know, this what you're talking about is the biggest problem with most of the digital cameras, and particularly the less expensive ones. Some of the manufacturers now are advertising what the delay is between when you press the shutter and when it actually takes the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's one more reason why I recommend someone actually, you know, goes into a store, holds the camera, presses the shutter button, and they can check out what the delay is on that camera.
Sure.
Because
what's the typical delay on a 35 millimeter?
It's normally listed in milliseconds, and yeah, I don't have that right off the top of my head. The way you can think about it, though, is once it's in focus, because the autofocus on the 35 millimeter cameras and the digital ones is the biggest factor that's going to slow it down. But let's say that it's in focus. Essentially, when you press the shutter button, it feels like it's taking the picture right away.
Yes.
And so rather than a number that's important, I think it's more the feel of it. You know, how quickly,
right,
is it taking it? You know, with some of the digital cameras, you press the shutter button, and it's trying to do an auto white balance. And it's, you know, trying to get the sensor charged up, you know, and it's trying to get everything ready. So sometimes it seems like it's, you know, sometimes a second or two or three even.
That's what it feels like. You know, we'll take a picture of, it's not bad if it's a still picture, but if there's any kind of motion, you know, how do you plan? Okay, let's see, they're moving at this rate, so I'll take it here so that when they get to what I want,
yep,
it'll be perfect.
Right, right. Oh, it's a tremendous frustration. And
yes,
and that's why I say that. I think that now manufacturers are getting to the point where the raw power of the sensor is not going to be so much the issue, but the shutter lag. And you will, and you do see some of them now saying, you know, with no delay. So I would, you know, look at the ads, see which ones advertise that, but then I would actually physically go in and hold it and, you know, take some pictures and see what kind of delay there really is.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right.
Have a good day.
All right, thank you. Let's go to line two. This is also in someone in Champaign. Hello.
Is this line two?
Yes.
Yes, hi. I have a Nikon Coolpix 4300 digital camera, which someone's just given me, so I'm just kind of learning how to use it.
But, sure.
What is it? If I want to print pictures, do you have a recommendation for what sort of printing setup I would need? Or
sure. Do you have a computer now?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So then the question becomes, how much do you want to spend, and you know, how much other printing do you do through your computer? Actually, at home I have the, you know, free. Well, it came free after rebate. It's an Epson C82, uh-huh. And that's just a regular four-color printer, inkjet printer, and the results from that printer are phenomenal.
Oh, really?
So that's just the kind of, you know.
So what's the price range of a printer like that for printing photos?
Sure. Well, let's say that there's not any rebate out there. You can, you know, go anywhere from maybe $79 on up to, you know, like $200 or $300.
Oh, really? Not as expensive as I was.
Yeah. Thinking. No, they're really amazingly cheap. Now, here's where they get you, though. Uh-huh. When you have to replace the ink cartridges, you can spend, you know, $60 on the ink cartridges, and the photographs are real ink hogs. So, and sometimes the paper that you're going to print it on is kind of expensive too. So,
does there, you know, what the ink cartridges last like, or how many photos do they, might you expect to get out of an ink cartridge?
Each of the manufacturers is going to be a little bit different. My feeling is, just because I don't do a lot of, you know, okay, I'm going to print out this whole roll of film.
Uh-huh.
I'd sort of print out an enlargement here or there when I have something that I like, or I want to give it to someone, or, you know, put it up on my wall. So my feeling is, my experience is that it doesn't take very many photographs before you've really drained that ink cartridge.
So it ends up being expensive in the long run.
It's very expensive, actually. I mean, some of the prints, if you're printing them out yourself, can be 50 cents a piece to a couple dollars a piece, depending upon the size and the quality of paper that you're using.
Wow. So is there an alternative to that?
Yeah, you know, most of the discount stores also will take in digital files now,
uh-huh.
and give you normal prints right off of your digital files.
Oh, I see.
So
it might be cheaper to just bring it in.
Yeah, yeah, taking your memory card. So it, you know, some of it depends on how much of a hobbyist you are and how much, you know, pride you take in that part of it.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot you can do to improve the quality of the image if you're working on it yourself. So if you're a hobbyist and want to spend the time, you can do some pretty cool things. But if it's, you know, maybe you're a hobbyist for some of your work, but a kind of a snapshotist for some of the other, you know, maybe some of the snapshot stuff you can just drop off.
I see. Yeah. I don't know yet what I'm going to be with it, but it's like right. Fun to play around with.
Right.
Just looking for a way to get started here.
Right. Yeah. Right. But if you have an inkjet printer connected to your computer, I would just, you know, print out some images and see what the quality looks like with that printer.
Printer?
Yeah.
Oh. So
yeah.
I don't need a different printer than necessarily?
Not necessarily. Do you have an inkjet printer now?
Yes.
Yeah, I think you should try, because, you know, as I say, the inkjet printer I have at home is just sort of a, you know, consumer market, everything printer, and even that printer does an amazing job just right off the bat.
Okay, well, great. Thanks a lot.
Sure. All right, thank you. And to line number three. This is also someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Hi. Brian Johnson is a member of our church. So, hi, Brian.
This is
Yes, that's my comment. My question is, I feel like a dinosaur. I have a Pentax, and I've been designated to do the UMW photography. The question, should I get a computer or stick with a Pentax?
You know, I think that's really an excellent question, because so often, and particularly in our society where it's so consumer-driven that the manufacturers want you to keep getting, you know, the newest and latest thing. One thing that David and I haven't talked about at all today, but even if you're shooting film, if you need to get your images onto a computer somehow for like a newsletter or something, you can buy scanners. You can get a flatbed scanner that just would scan the prints that you've made. Or if you want higher quality, you can get a scanner that will scan in the actual film that went through your Pentax. So I think here's the question. If there are pictures that are going to go up on the United Methodist Women board at church, you can just, you know, take your Pentax, shoot your pictures just like normally, and then, you know, put them up on the board, and that works fine. And then if there are some pictures that, you know, need to go in a newsletter or something, usually that needs to get to the computer realm in some way. Most of the flatbed scanners, you can get some, you know, flatbed scanners for, you know, $70, $80, $90 that do a pretty amazing job. So that's a good approach also, where you can keep your camera, you can keep shooting film, and then just go to the computer realm when you need to.
Thank you.
Sure. All right, thank you. Their questions are welcome. We have about 12 minutes left with Brian Johnson. He's professor of journalism at U of I, teaches photojournalism, and every once in a while, as he is on the program, we talk about cameras and photography. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We have some photographs, some archival photographs that have been around for a long time.
Right.
And also people will probably think about some of the color pictures that were shot like when we were kids and what they look like now. So I guess you'd have
to... let's describe those photos. Kind of brown, sort of that magenta-y look, right?
It looks like someone kind of dipped them in bleach and they just kind of, you know... they really look bad. Whereas older black and white
right.
pictures, they still look
they
really
still look
good.
Great, exactly.
So I'm sure that maybe one of the questions people ask about now, the digital photographs that are printed on inkjet printers, they wonder, well, how long is that print going to be good for?
Right, right. Well, some of the new inkjet printers, they've done, you know, accelerated aging. But some of those printers, they claim, have... if you're using the archival inks and the archival paper, they can last for 100 years, 50 to 100 years, which is longer than a traditional photograph would last, a traditional color photograph. Yeah, so actually some of the inkjet prints have better longevity than some of the more traditional photographic processes.
But that might be one of the things that you might want to think about if you really want the photograph to last that long. You're
That's exactly right.
Take that in
you have to pay attention to, you know, what the manufacturer says and what kind of paper they want you to use in conjunction with the inks to give you that sort of longevity.
Are they as susceptible to being damaged by exposure to light as the photographic prints that we're familiar with?
Right, right. All of them are susceptible. I mean, light is the real enemy. And it's like we've always joked in the past, you know, how do you make your photographs last? Don't look at them.
Keep them in a drawer.
Keep them in a drawer.
Yeah. Okay. We have several callers here. We'll try to get them all in. Urbana First, line one. Hello.
Well, you just actually asked my question. I wanted to know about the archival quality. Just with inkjet printers, I was under the impression that they had so little archival quality. So do you think there's special inks then that we should be looking for? Is that a variable on printers?
Yes, you know, and it's something that you need to look for. I know Epson, for instance, has a I don't know, they normally tie it to the printer specifically, but they have some that are more archival. So that you're exactly right that the run-of-the-mill inkjet printers have horrible light stability and they are not very archival at all. But some of the other inkjet printers, if you're using the archival papers and the inks that they're selling as a combination, they have amazingly good archival stability.
Okay, and I just wanted to make a quick comment for the woman who wanted a recommendation on a camera. I have that little Canon ELF that I absolutely love for point and shoot.
Okay, great.
It's so easy.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye. Thank you. To Champagne, line two. Hello.
Hi. I'm actually curious if there are any groups or clubs that I could get involved with for photography. I have a 35mm Canon Rebel. I guess it's kind of old-fashioned now because it's film. But because I'm interested perhaps in learning more or taking more of the hobbyist approach to doing
sure.
the photography.
Right. You know, in Champaign-Urbana, there's the Champaign County Camera Club that's been around for a long time. And, you know, as they have regular meetings. At the U of I, if you're connected with the U of I, at the U of I at all, there's also the Illini Photography Club. That's pretty active.
Do they have any place that you can have access perhaps to a dark room or to get involved with something like that?
You know, that's the amazing thing. The Illini Photography Club just was able to find a space in the Illini Union. So they actually do have a dark room there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And line three, this is Champaign. Hello.
Yes, I have a Canon S10, and the last couple weekends I've taken it away and took pictures. And when I get home, I load it into my new printer, and some of the pictures are blank. And I'm wondering, can those little cards wear out, or you think it's in the printer or camera?
I'm going to guess that it is probably the card. Sometimes those cards, they'll have problems writing the data, or the data will get a little bit scrambled.
Mm-hmm.
So there are problems like that. Sometimes I found that if I put it into a different type of card reader,
okay.
You know, there are little card readers you can get instead of just reading it through the camera. Sometimes that can help.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes if you have a friend that has a digital camera that uses that same type of card,
mm-hmm.
sometimes that can help a little bit. But you're absolutely okay. Right that the cards sometimes do develop problems.
Is there any way to skip ahead on that card and not use like the first 20?
There, with some of the cards, you can lock out the bad areas, but with a lot of cards, they don't come with any data management software.
Okay.
That's one thing I like about Lexar as a brand is that they do, on some of the more professional cards, they do offer data recovery services.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I thought maybe I had another camera problem.
All right. All right. Let's go to line four. Someone here on a cell phone. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
My question is, I don't know a lot about cameras, but I'm interested in taking pictures of like lightning and thunderstorms, things of that matter. And I was given by my in-laws Canon EOS.
Right.
I think the kind of camera it is, and
uh-huh.
I'm just wondering if that is a good camera for that kind of pictures, or it's got a lot of different options, and I read the manual to it, and it's kind of all foreign to me.
Sure, sure. You know, one thing, if you're trying to shoot lightning pictures, if you can get a good tripod,
uh-huh.
set the camera up on a tripod, and then put it in the TV mode, which lets you set the shutter speed.
Right.
Okay. Then you can set a really long shutter speed, maybe like 30 seconds.
Right.
If it's dark out now is what I'm assuming. Then you press the shutter button and you hope within that 30 seconds you get a lightning strike.
Okay.
So that's the way to do that. If you're shooting just the thunderstorms and want to do that, I would say just put it in either the green rectangle mode or in the program mode.
Okay.
And then again, you might, if you have this tripod for trying to get the lightning shots, you can put it on the tripod to be sure you're not going to get any camera shake. Because
yeah.
I'm thinking if you're taking pictures of, you know, these thunderstorms, a lot of times it's a little bit darker out.
Right. Yeah, I just read in a book somewhere that this certain guy that does this professionally, he said he'll leave it the shutter speed for like minutes at a time.
Right.
And I never understood how. I don't understand how that works, how you can leave it open. Does it just memorize everything that it sees while it's open?
Right, and that's it. You know, and if it's at nighttime, there's basically no light coming from anywhere at all, so you can have it open for long periods okay. like that. And what happens also is that the lens stops down to not let much light through that uh-huh. way if there is some light source.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right, thanks. One of the things that I was thinking about And particularly, I don't know if this is particularly true if you're taking pictures outside during the daytime, but you can have a picture where within the frame, what it is you're trying to take a picture of, there can be a big difference in light levels.
Yes.
There can be some areas that are really bright and some areas that are really dark. And the cameras, particularly those that are automatic, there's going to be some way that they're going to look at that entire scene and they're going to pick part of it to decide how they're going to set their exposure, which can then get you into some areas are going to be overexposed, some are going to be underexposed, and it can be a real challenge to figure out what should I focus on to try to get what is in the middle so I can sort of make a compromise between the two.
Some of it is that you have to be careful where you set your subject up. If it's a picture of a person, you know, the classic case, don't put them in front of a window. But one thing I'll do a lot when I'm using my point-and-shoot cameras and I'm shooting outdoors, I'll turn the flash on. And a lot of times when I'm taking pictures of people outdoors, I turn the flash on. The flash is going to illuminate the person. And then the camera's, you know, going to set kind of an overall exposure. But at least I know that my person then is going to have this flash exposure. So at least I'll be able to see their face. And the light, that helps to balance it sometimes with a brighter background.
Anything else, sort of a quick tip?
Well, I was just thinking of one other thing with a woman that called in about where she had some black pictures. It could be a memory card. And I was thinking, well, it could be, you know, maybe she was using flash and the flash didn't have enough time to charge up in between pictures so that she took the picture in the flash. And so, I mean, there's some other issues that could be camera related, but they also could be memory card related as well.
So it could just be with those cards. Those are some things that store the data.
People don't.
They do wear out, maybe.
It isn't exactly that they wear out, but, you know, if they get, you know, bent a little bit or if you drop them or, you know, there are issues that can affect how well, how reliable they are.
Well, thanks very much.
Sure. Glad to be here.
I'm Brian Johnson. He's professor of journalism at U of I, teaches photojournalism, and every once in a while he's here on the program. We talk about taking pictures and photography. The program today, Focus 580, made possible in part by a grant from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. On the next Afternoon Magazine, Celeste Quinn will be talking with a couple of guests about traveling on a tight budget. Judy Kutzko and Dorothy Newman, they are retired, and they're having the time of their lives. They go cheap, and they go often. And in fact, they're just back from a trip to England and France. So today on the Afternoon Magazine, your questions will be invited. Questions and comments for Judy and Dorothy following the 1 o'clock news. That's here on AM 580. The show itself begins at noon with news from NPR, the BBC, AM 580. And that's all here on AM 580 at noon. Celeste Quinn is the host for the show. The next part of this program, we'll be talking with Paul Bloom. He is professor of psychology at Yale University and has done a lot of research on children and essentially what it is they are born knowing, how it is, or perhaps it's a way of looking, better way to say it's a way of looking at the world around us that we are born knowing. And it explains a lot, he says, about human nature. He's written about this in his book, Descartes' Baby, How the Science of Child Development Explains What Makes Us Human. And we'll be talking about that in the next part of the show. Right now, though, we'll break for news and an update on the market.